Jackson trying to escape and run for it, and he's got it more. Lamar Jackson down the sideline. Will they give it to him? They will. Touchdown, Baltimore.
And with 1:17 left to play on Wild Card Weekend, the Hayes in the Barn.
Oh my God! I wish you guys could. I wish we had a camera in here so you could see what we're doing. We're just a bunch of clowns in here.
How much fun is that?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Friday, September 24th. My name is Jake Luke. I'm joined on screen by Spencer Schultz. It's been a while, bud. How's it going?
Been such a long while. Been a whole 22 hours since I've seen your beautiful face. We popped out a little midweeky double recap episode, and we might be doing some more of those, especially if there's, you know, some of the bigger games. I'm sure Cleveland will probably definitely do those and go back and put them under the microscope. Bigger games, maybe won't be doing that for this one. Hopefully we won't have to be doing that for this one, but we're going to preview these Detroit Rock City loins and look at what's going on. There's been a pretty annoying day overall on the interweb, on the Twitter sphere. So
you were pretty jacked up.
I was pretty jacked up. The stuff about, I mean, number one, there's this lingering thing that, you know, the Ravens shouldn't pay Lamar, which it's just the most ironic thing, because you imagine the dude's going to get, if he was a free agent going into this offseason, if the Ravens declined his, let's just say in a random scenario for the sake of this conversation, they declined his option. Let's say they decided to draft Justin Fields. They did Bucky Brooks. They're going to let him graduate like Bucky Brooks wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
And Lamar goes into this offseason as a free agent. The man's going to get $150 million plus, guaranteed, probably over at least a four-year deal. I think at least, you know, what teams aren't going to look into that? Even the Seahawks might look into that, it feels like, you know, depending on kind of their situation with Russell Wilson. But there's probably like seven teams that would be like, we're good, we're fine. Mahomes, we're fine. You know, the Cowboys paid Dak. They're happy with him. You know, Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville probably is safe, and maybe some of those things. Who knows? I mean, maybe the Jets would be like, screw Zach Wilson. We'll take Lamar Jackson. We know what he is. You never know. So I would say at least 25 teams would be willing to step into the ring and pay him double whatever that unnamed goblin said about, oh, let pay him what they paid Marlon Humphrey and Ronnie Stanley. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? So that started it off hot, and that was annoying, number one.
Yeah, that to me is like, and I was right there with you. That really annoyed me, and it annoyed some other writers at the site, which in turn annoyed other people, and we don't have to get into all that, obviously. But just one of those things where, like, part of what came up there is, like, this whole idea of sources and journalistic integrity. And to me, like, that we're having two different conversations there, because journalism needs to bring real value, in my opinion, to start having the journalistic integrity conversation. What value are we bringing in talking about this? It's none. You're bringing this up in a week where Jackson is being praised, where Jackson is, you know, talks about a contract extension start back up. And by extension, that's where this I'm hearing X, I'm hearing Y, I'm hearing Z contrarian point, and I'm going to bring it up. Maybe you do have sources. Maybe you do, but like it fits into this, and Dan Patrick has a thing with this where it's like, I'm hearing has become a brand of quote unquote journalism in the modern era. And this is not to, you know, rag on or say whatever about actual real journalists, of which there are many and of which is a very important profession, but that is certainly not what we're talking about with people like this.
It feeds into that exact I'm hearing culture, and that's part of our culture now. I'm hearing this about this celebrity, this artist, this athlete. I'm hearing. And sure, I mean, a lot of times it feels like journalists can get a little bit used and abused at times from some of these unnamed sources.
And that's another dark part of it, where they are a cog in the machine. Adam Schefter He brings a lot of value. He is a good insider, and he has broken a lot of important stories. He is also a puppet at times for agents, for front offices, and for players. And, you know, that's part of it too, but continue.
It's part of the game. That's why I think it's just part of generally going deeper clickbait culture. And that is the major issue at hand, because it's the titles. And we are the ones who are ultimately at fault in these situations, because we see an article, unnamed NFC executive says Lamar Jackson isn't worth money. We're the ones who create the drama out of it. We were the ones who did that. And, you know, I quote tweeted it and said, yeah, I'm sure there aren't 25 GMs willing to pay him $250 million. I'm at fault in making this a narrative, a story, whatever. So we, the consumer, we, the audience, are just as much at blame in this. And it's the result of advertising-based writing and titling that feeds into these clickbait narratives. And that's just the way it is today. That's the society we live in. That's the business model. That's capitalistic journalism in the United States of America and in many other countries around the world right now. You know, I mean, Florio is the king, the absolute king of taking one. He'll take five words out of a sentence, out of a 30-second paragraph of a quote, and label his article, and it'll be completely out of context, and then we all flip out. So we're the ones
also,
to blame.
And he's also one of the guys that is as quick as anyone to get up on Mount Pius and accuse other people's journalistic practices.
Exactly. He's a hypocrite.
It's a circle jerk. Like it's a complete circle jerk.
Spot on. So we're at fault. We are the ones who have to do better and just dismiss it and roll on through. And, you know, I peddled it. I commented on it. We're talking about it now. So that's the conclusion. That's the resolution. Is that if we don't like this stuff, then we got to stop talking about it and stop reading it. And I think that's a solution to a lot of problems.
Yeah, I think, not to pat myself on the back or anything, but I think I largely have done a good job of that. There was probably a time maybe a year or two ago when I would have jumped straight into this thing. But I don't know. I think it is just kind of getting to a point. And occasionally, you know, the bulldog will get out of the cage a little bit and I'll tweet at Shannon Sharp and, you know, things will happen. But ultimately, like, I think I've done a good job of pushing some of the Lamar stuff out of my mind a little bit. I think other people have made active efforts to do so. I'm sure you probably have to an extent. And I'm telling you,
I actually figured out that somehow Lamar Jackson was a followed. I don't know if I did it or what happened or if I clicked it or if I thought it was something else. I figured out maybe 6 months ago, I followed Lamar Jackson on Twitter, the like phrase.
Yeah.
So I was like, why? Where is it? So I'm basically just getting catapulted into my face and I didn't realize I did that. Thankfully, I took that off. And it did me well. So I definitely, it's just tough. It's just tough. And it's just tired. It's beaten, especially with the Lamar narratives. So I want to lay off and I've made an effort to, but sometimes it's too much for me to handle.
Yeah. Sometimes you do have to, you got to take up the weapons and go to war a little bit, but really all it is learning how to pick your battles, which is an important lesson in life, no matter what. So take with that, or take from that what you will. And if you are one of the people that replies to everything and defends Lamar at every turn, I'm not saying I don't respect that because I certainly do. I just kind of have run out of the energy at this point because not only Lamar, but like this goes all the way back to like the Joe Flacco era. And it's just like at a certain point, it's just tiring. And it's especially tiring to me now where there's no doubt in my mind that this guy does not deserve this.
Right.
So just don't entertain it.
Right. And the grand irony of it, again, is that, I mean, who has beaten Patrick Mahomes? Teams in his division and Tom Brady, is that it? The Rams beat him once too, I think?
Yes.
Teams in his division that have played, that have had, eight shots going into this year at it already, each. Then Tom Brady, twice, and the Rams in a, when Mahomes scored over 50. So it's just the grand irony is that one of those narratives, one of those bull crap things that Lamar has to beat Mahomes in order to be worth something when Josh Allen hasn't done it. Deshaun Watson beat him once too, pardon me. Deshaun Watson did beat him once.
Oh, that's yeah, the other yeah, one. Yeah.
So Watson's beat him once. Allen hasn't beaten him. Mayfield hasn't. Like, you know, these teams and their quarterbacks haven't beaten him. So that's just another one. It's just the goalpost moving, but the narrative's not moving with them. Like, it's the same narratives, but different goalposts of things he has to check off and things of that nature. So then, you know, to wrap, put a bow on that half of the conversation, then we get the delight of Lamar Jackson hurt himself flipping into the end zone. He said that yesterday. And I'm sitting here, I see ESPN notifications, Lamar Jackson hurt himself flipping to the end zone. And I'm clicking them and I'm saying, where is this coming from? What is this coming from? He said that? I was loosely watching the press conference yesterday. And I remembered him saying something along the lines like, oh yeah, I was real sore and didn't want Harbaugh to get on me, you know, didn't want coach to get on me about flipping, whatever. So he didn't say anything. So I was like, what am I missing? The injury report comes out. There's nothing on it. So now it's getting spun around. And I was pissed too, because I thought I must be wrong. He must have hurt himself flipping into the end zone. And now he can't practice. You know, so I got a little pissed because I was like, this is the third time he's done something in his career going into the end zone that is like results, blah, 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 blah. And it turns out it was all just, none of it was true.
It's another example and kind of goes back into what we're talking about of Twitter journalism and speculation kind of all meeting in this kind of weird, you know, social media hyperspace where news just kind of accelerates people's opinions and their sort of emotions, and, you know, emotions were involved, and you got a little pissed off certainly. And it all kind of started, funny enough, where a friend of the show, Jonas, and like, I'm not pointing fingers at him or putting him at fault here, but he tweeted when the news came out that Jackson had mentioned that he felt sore from the flip. And it was partially, I think, I don't know if he tweeted this initially with it or later on, but that he also said that Harbaugh had made a comment about that as well on Monday. So I reached out to him. We were talking about it a little bit. He was like, yeah, like, it, you know, it wouldn't totally shock me if that was the issue. But that's just Jonas speculating. That's not Jonas like going on record and saying like, all right, here's something that's going on. So I think a lot of people started to take it like that to the point where, again, full circle, bring it back to our boy Shefty is literally tweeting about it. And that's going out to millions of people who are seeing it. And then from there, within minutes, everyone's tweeting, oh, Lamar Jackson, idiot, flipped into the end zone, hurt his hip. There we are. And
what a showboat. What an idiot. He's the quarterback, blah, blah, blah. And it just goes on and carries on and on and on and on. And again, it's like two birds at the same time of the stone being this exact conversation that we're having about the kind of culture that we have with it. And it, again, is just the week that he checked a box off that everybody's been asking him to check off, beating the Chiefs. He checks that off. A couple of days later, it's like, that didn't even happen. He's not worth this money. Someone said that. And he's an idiot flipping into the end zone. So, and it's like all out of thin air, basically. It's all speculative. It's all subjective. And that part of it, I was just like, good Lord, I don't know how that came to be and how it spun so quickly into something. And ultimately, I'm just glad he's not. I'm glad he didn't mess his hip up flipping into the end zone. He's got the poopies or the pukies or whatever. He doesn't feel good and whatever else. So he's supposed to be fine and can go play against the Detroit Rock City Lions this weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen him have stomach issues before in the middle of a game, potentially. And we saw what happened after that.
He used to get sick in general. I think he got sick his rookie year.
Yeah.
Before the Bengals game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a whole thing. Is he going to be able to play? You know, is Flacco going to have to play? What's going to happen? And I don't even, who is the other quarterback? RG3?
Yes, in 18.
Is RG3 going to have to play? Yada, 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 yada. So I think Lamar's got a little, his tummy's not so tough. His Achilles is his tummy.
He's got a bitch-ass tum-tum is what you're saying?
He might have a little bit of a bitch-ass tum-tum.
Damn.
That's his Achilles heel is his tum-tum.
Well,
I put chili into my tum-tum. It's chili season, folks.
Are we approaching a Jordan situation where, like, let's say Jared Goff is going to, you know, order up some sort of Detroit-style pizza, which is very hot in the streets these days, slip something into it, and send it over as a little gift to Lamar this weekend when they're in Detroit this Saturday, and then he's going to have to play a flu game?
He's going to have to play a shrimp Alfredo game.
Shout out to Michael Scott. Yeah, so I guess, does that get us into the game then, do you think? Have we said enough on this, you know, what shouldn't have been a controversial week, but again, a controversial week in the life of a quarterback who the more success he has, somehow the more polarizing he continues to become.
It truly is incredible. And the way you just put it is so spot on. So yeah, I think that puts a bow on it. And my conclusion is that I have to be better and we all have to be better in just not acknowledging it. And maybe, and it'll help live our lives without acknowledging that stuff. I know Michael Crawford at Abukari, who's done work, I think, with Russell Street Report and his two guys watching football now with Cole. He I remember he had a tweet a while ago. It was like, life is so much better when you stop caring about Lamar Jackson tweets. And that's kind of the best way to put it. So I've got to do better. We've got to do better. We all have to do better in just letting it go. We have Deuce 1042 saying here in the comms, dude must have IBS or something. It may be.
Honestly, like, that's not the worst theory.
That's my speculation. Lamar Jackson gets the poopies a little bit too often.
But I thought IBS was more of like you have to have some psychological stuff going on. So it doesn't seem like he does. It seems like he's a pretty carefree guy.
Yeah, I think he just gets the poopies a lot. Who knows?
Which
we need to get. Let's get Lamar Jackson some probiotics.
How about we let's destigmatize the poopies? That's what I'm thinking.
Destigmatize the poopies. That should have been the name of this episode. Destigmatize the poopies
for sure.
So let's get Lamar Jackson some apple cider vinegar. Let's get him some probiotics, and he'll be rocking and rolling for this weekend's first Sunday 1 o'clock game for the Ravens. 3 weeks in, which is kind of crazy. Two primetime games to start. I think that's underrated and how crazy both of these games have been. And now going to Detroit to play kind of a, you know, they can trap game you. They do have Dan Campbell, but they've got a lot of players on the IR. They're out in their corners. And, you know, hopefully this is a pretty calm game.
Yeah, hopefully. So I guess we can jump into it a little bit. So here you go. Not sure how much we can all see that, but I like to pull up the PFF lineups to kind of just get a look at where a team's strength as far as their metrics sort of look. So what are we seeing off the bat here? Because it's not looking great for the Lions as far as what I see.
Yeah, they don't use a lot of play action, and that I think definitely is never a good idea. I think we've seen Tom Brady struggle when you don't use enough play action. We saw him struggle last year on the Bucs, and it's unfortunate. I do believe Taylor Decker is still on the IR, if I'm not mistaken. So we got Penei Sewell at left tackle. And the Lions came into the season with a really kick-ass line in kind of the works. I like Jonah Jackson a lot last year coming out of Ohio State. That was a guy I talked about on this podcast quite a bit. He's playing guard there. They have maybe the best center in the NFL in Frank Ragnow. And I believe that he's just an outstanding zone blocker who can do some things in the power game and do some things in some big boy ball. But I really like Frank Ragnow and his ability to work. And then, you know, talking about this offense, I mean, it's Jared Goff at quarterback, and then the star players on the outside are going to be DeAndre Swift, TJ Hawkinson, who's a really well-rounded tight end, Monra St. Brown, we've talked about, and they're going to be without Tyrell Williams. They do have Quintez Cephas, who has played about 80 snaps there. Most of those come in as pass snaps. So I guess I'll say it's an anemic offense, especially they don't have Decker and they're without Williams. They're missing a lot of players. They've been banged up a little bit. They also have Jamal Williams. So this offense is a little plain. It's a little plain Jane, a little standard drop back game. They run, you know, a good share of zone concept. So this offense can score a couple points. You know, I think they're a average functioning offense. I don't think they're a terrible offense by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Especially just going off of what I feel like I've watched in the first couple weeks with them. I mean, they kept it close with San Francisco. Nobody was really expecting them to do that. So I got to give them props. It looks like they're 22nd overall in DVOA. They come in at, 25th in as far as passing offense. It has them fourth in rushing offense.
Fourth in rushing offense. That makes sense. They have a good line. They've got some road graders up front. Talked about a couple of those guys. Let's see. In terms of blocking from Sports Info Solutions, the Lions have Matt Nelson at right tackle. He is the most blown blocks with 7. And let me see. 6 of those came on pass plays. So, wow. Okay. So, the Lions have only run the ball, I believe, 38 total times, if I'm not mistaken. And they've had 3 blown blocks and 1 hold on those 38 plays. They've had 102 dropbacks and have 18 blown blocks. So they're blowing a block at about an 18% clip on that offensive line versus about an 8%, 7.5% clip in the run game. So it definitely seems like they've been able to pass, or they've been able to move people in the run game a little bit better. I haven't, full disclosure, been able to watch a ton of actual film of them yet. I've been pretty busy. This was a big week with the Ravens and Chiefs, and this game isn't exactly like a blockbuster, but I will get into it on Twitter and some articles and things later.
They go into 11, or have at least in the first two games, 69% of the time.
Nice.
So, yeah, exactly. Very nice. So it does seem like they're kind of trying to set up to be that power team, let Jared Goff be that play-action pocket-passing quarterback that I think a lot of people envisioned him to be, which he kind of really was with the Rams for at least the two successful years that he had with McVay, when he would just drop back, have all kinds of time to throw, and then find one of these weapons wide open that he was working with. The cupboard is pretty bare there. You talked about Quintez Cephas kind of being his top wide receiving option. TJ Hockenson's a very good tight end, as we know. So is he kind of the top option that you're thinking the Ravens are going to have to worry about? Because looking at last week, I still have the image of Byron Pringle and Travis Kelce just running through this defense, and I have the image in my head of Malik Harrison and Patrick Queen having some difficulties. So is that kind of the matchup for Hockenson? It's one of these guys, and I don't know, do you try to double him? What are you thinking with this guy?
I think the Ravens might be a little funky in terms of blitzing heavily, and I don't think they're going to go ask Patrick Queen to go, you know, mark TJ Hockenson in man coverage, a guy who's 5 inches taller, just as, you know, relatively close to the same athleticism. So I'm thinking Chuck Clark's probably going to be on him, probably put some corners on him, some different things than those. The Lions have dropped back 102 times, Goff thrown 5 touchdowns, 2 picks, 1 in each game. And let's see, play action. They have run play action on, out of 103 dropbacks, only 15 of those. So a pretty low rate of play action. On those, Goff is 12 of 13 for 97 yards. So he hasn't exactly been crushing defenses when they've used play action. I think that they have had one gain. They've had 2 throws of 20 yards off of play action, and only 4 total of those have gone for at least 10 yards. So not getting a ton of production when they do use play action in that pass game. I will say, I think DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams both are really strong pass catching running backs that can do some different things and be versatile, be very useful in different settings in the pass game from different alignments. So I think those two are definitely ones to watch. And then I like Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he's a nice little chain mover at this point in time. And Cephas is still trying to develop himself. He's never been a big separator, but he's definitely a big contested catch guy. So, yeah, I'd say on this offense, it's pretty much the backs and Hockenson, and that's what you got to worry about.
Yeah, and it looks like it. Goff looks like 101 passer rating out of 11, and then the next closest is a 90 passer rating out of 12, and then nothing even really comes close. So that's a full 10 points in passer rating higher when you have that kind of heavier grouping out on the field. So interested to see how that's going to work. And, like, just for the eye test, like, I haven't had the chance to watch a ton of film either. Kind of all I've really seen out of Goff that I've liked is that he still has a little bit of that trademark accuracy, but there's just not enough time. He's not mobile enough. And I think he's going to struggle against a Ravens defensive front that has, if nothing else, shown itself to be really, really athletic and really tenacious.
Yeah, I think that the Ravens are definitely going to be able to get pressure. I think they'll use a good bit of 5-man blitzes in this one to get 5 one-on-ones and see if they can do some real damage, especially if, you know, the offense is churning. They don't run any RPOs, really, only one. So far, the Lions have run 1 RPO, so they basically are just a drop-back passing team. They have a really high pass split. They have trailed in both of those games, so they did have to throw the ball a little bit more than they want to. They ran 1 RPO, and it actually went for a touchdown from 2 yards out to Quintez Cephas. So this is a straight drop-back offense, and I don't really get that. I don't really think that's quite wise in terms of motion. Out of those 103 dropbacks, the Lions have had motion on 29 of them. So not terrible. And guess what? Jared Goff, 3 of his 5 touchdowns have come when there was motion, pre-snap motion at all. So it looks like they, you know, if a blind squirrel can find a nut, I don't know how the Lions can't figure out that motion's helping them out a lot, as Goff has had really good production there so far. I'll need to dig deeper, and maybe there's more to it than just the numbers, but Goff is 19 of 26 for 259 yards and 3 touchdowns, 188 intended air yards, an EPA of 9.46 with 13 points earned. Sheesh. When the Detroit Lions use motion pre-snap. Holy shit. That is really high on 26 attempts. So, I mean, maybe part of it is the fact that they use it so infrequently that it's a little surprising and you're not quite sure what they're going to do as a defense. The Ravens will have 26 plays to look at it now. And I guess, let's see, how many did they run in week one? Yeah, they only ran a few against the 49ers. It looks like there were 9 of those 26 came against the 49ers. So the lion's share of that was last week. So Ravens have a little better idea. But I'd expect the Lions to try to use some wrinkles off of that. That's what I would do, at least, if I were them in this situation. See if you can't get some motion, incorporate some RPOs, and do something. It feels like they're not going to use the play-action passing game. I don't think maybe Jared Goff loves play-action passing. I don't know what other reason there is, because it is so efficient. But, yeah, so I just don't see a ton that you're really threatened by aside from that.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's not looking great. In fact, it's looking much worse on the defensive side of the ball, where they're ranked 32nd overall in DVOA. They are 32nd against the pass. They are 29th against the run.
Sheesh.
This defense is a little nameless and faceless to me, to be kind.
Yeah, they've definitely had some injuries. It's rumored right now. Well, it's not, I don't think it's rumored. I think they're just trying to get rid of Jamie Collins right now. They're without Jeff Okuda, their top pick from last year, who did struggle last year. He's let up 2 completions this year for 86 yards and a touchdown. I think he played week one. They drafted Fedo Melifonwu, who put on a dazzling show at the Senior Bowl, a guy that I liked a lot. He's allowed 1 catch on 3 targets for 19 coverage snaps. He is also out now. So they are in bad shape in terms of injuries. They have a lot of guys banged up on offense. Trey Flowers, probably one of the top names there on that defense. Trey Flowers is a big-name free agent, came over in from the Patriots and has, you know, was relatively productive in Patricia's system. He isn't giving them what they paid for, or didn't give them what they paid for, but I don't think Matt Patricia gave them what they paid for, so that might have a little bit more to do with it, but Trey Flowers is probably the showstopper there. And then we get to see Aleem the Dream, guy that you guys might remember, people who listened through the draft coverage this offseason. Aleem McNeil, or as I like to call him, Gojira, Godzilla. He is a madman, and we've already seen some flashes of it a little bit in his ability to take on some double teams. At NC State, he was unbelievable in terms of being a fire hydrant that had quickness to go make plays between the tackle box and was able to actually generate some pressure. So I'm excited to see a couple snaps of Aleem McNeil and go back and watch that relative to what I know about the Ravens offense. And then they've also got Michael Brockers up front.
Ravens legend.
Former future Raven.
Yep.
Former future Raven. And then they've got Amani Arouye, the corner out of Penn State.
Is that how you say that?
Arouye, I think so. And then they've got the Aquara brothers, Julian, and the other one's name is Escape.
Romeo Aquara.
Yeah, Romeo Aquara was a pretty dynamic pass rusher last year. In terms of sacks, no player has more than 1 so far. It's only been 2 games. In terms of hurries, it looks like Romeo Aquara has 7. So he's definitely been getting after it a little bit. He has 2 knockdowns, 8 total pressures, 3 hits, and has been making a little bit of hay, it looks like. They've drawn 2 holding penalties so far. Charles Harris, they have a name, a little blast from the past. A lot of people wanted the Ravens to draft him in the first round a couple years ago. And Nick Williams also drew 1. So looks like there's, I think there's some interesting names. They also have Derek Barnes, linebacker to Purdue. I don't think he's played a ton, but a really intriguing linebacker to me that I liked. Thought he had a really well-balanced game, could run a little bit, could cover a little bit, do everything. I liked him a lot. So maybe we'll get to see some of him in this game.
Yeah, 4th rounder this year. It's interesting, man. We kind of talked a little bit before we got going here that, this is pulling back the curtain a little bit, but sometimes with games like this, it kind of feels like we don't have a ton to say as far as what the Ravens can do. And I think part of that being the case here is it just feels to me like it's a fairly obvious run the shit out of the ball and get Mark Andrews going game. What say you?
Yeah, I think there's a big game to get Mark Andrews involved. It looks like they've faced, I think, 60 coverage snaps so far. They do use a good bit of cover 3. They do use, I think, a good bit of cover 4 as well. No, they very rarely use cover 4. So they're a single high defense for the most part, which helps Mark Andrews go to work up those seams. And it looks like they've had 24 of their coverage snaps out of 60 in cover one or cover three. So that's single high. And that's gonna lend itself to being able to make those plays. The Ravens are familiar with cover three. It is what they get more than any other team in the NFL. So I don't think there's any elite player on the back end right now that's going to make them pay. And I think that they're going to want to get Mark Andrews involved. I think it's a big game to maybe kind of, you know, get Devin Duvernay a couple scheme touches, get James Prochet maybe a touch or two, and hopefully the Ravens are able to make hay with it. I just think in general, defenses in particular, it's Aaron Glenn. I think Aaron Glenn is the Lions defensive coordinator.
Sounds right.
Came from the Saints. Yeah, I was right. So he comes from the Saints. I like Aaron Glenn a lot as a player. He had a really elite unit on that Saints defense in their secondary. And he has not seen Lamar Jackson. The Saints didn't see Lamar Jackson. And the Lions haven't seen Lamar Jackson. And they have a new coaching staff. And I don't really think anyone in their top of their higher up of coaching staff or really any of the players on their defense have seen Lamar Jackson. And that usually doesn't lend itself, especially for a team that's 0-2, especially for a team that looks like it might be turning into sellers pretty quickly with a lot of guys on the IR. That just doesn't lend itself well. So I think this definitely, definitely, definitely could turn into a bloodbath. Pretty, pretty, pretty bad in like the second and third quarter, I'd say. You know, the Ravens might have a methodical drive, choose up a bunch of clock, 8 minutes, you know, 80-yard or 75-yard touchdown drive, and it's 7-0, and maybe the Lions are able to have a couple good scripted plays, kick a field goal or score a touchdown or something. And then I feel like the Ravens are just really going to start to pull away in that second and third quarter as the game wears on. And I think there's going to be blown assignments for a young secondary in year one of a new scheme. I think there's going to be tons of room in the passing game. The option game is probably going to be absolutely stellar. They do have some pretty nimble edges a little bit, you know, the Aquaras and Trey Flowers, they're decently fleet of foot. So maybe they can force some decent angles and contain some things, but ultimately I think this is going to get ugly on that side of the ball.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think as far as game flow, I'm expecting the Ravens to jump out. I think the Lions are going to just kind of start throwing a little bit, and I like Campbell. I don't think he's got a lot to work with this year. I'm not expecting much, and I'm not really going to judge him on results, but this is kind of a stupid sports talk radio thing, but I do think back to his time with the Dolphins when he really whipped out the kitchen sink as the interim coach there in 2015, and had those guys playing hard. They beat the Texans like 58-0 in one game. They ran the Statue of Liberty. So I think he's a guy who's capable of bringing the kitchen sink to a game. And I don't think it's going to show up early. I think maybe they'll win like one quarter. Like I'm kind of thinking Ravens get out to a strong start. Maybe they get up by like two or three touchdowns. Lions mount a little bit of a charge, and then Ravens come in and just score a late touchdown to really put the game away is what I'm feeling. I don't know if we're getting into our predictions quite yet, but that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm digging a little deeper into maybe what their offense could do rushing the ball. Looks like they have 6 carries, 3 each for Swift and Williams in outside zone, and that's resulted in 60 yards. So doing quite well there. A couple explosive runs out of it as well. So it looks like that zone scheme is definitely going to be very key in terms of zone runs in general. They, out of those 38 runs, it looks like 24 of them have been zone blocking in some way. And Jamal Williams averaging 6.2 yards a carry there. Swift hasn't gotten anything crazy going, but interesting to see there. So they do run a little bit of power and a little bit of some man and gap, but they're more so a zone team for the most part. They have 8 carries and power concepts. So yeah, I think that's the one area where maybe they can get something going early and keep it pretty close would be maybe running the ball, where the Ravens have I'd say have done a good job so far, but maybe, you know, this defense feels like, you know, they're playing a much inferior opponent and they don't care as much about the run. And maybe the Lions are able to gain a little traction early in the game, but I don't think that's going to be able to hold up, especially if there's not a big threat of throwing the ball to, or if there's no receiver that establishes himself and kind of shocks the world a little bit and comes out and makes them pay and wins one-on-ones and gets you to start backing up a little bit. I think that'll wear away. So, yeah, I ultimately think this game's going to get out of hand in the second and third quarter. I think the Ravens -8 is unbelievable. So if it was at M&T Bank Stadium, they would be -14. They'd be 14-point favorites. So at a neutral site, they'd be 11. So I think that this game gets out of hand. I don't think the Lions have much of a home field advantage, anything like that. So ultimately, I feel like this game ends up being, let's say, like a 31-10 or a 33-13, something along those lines.
So is that the predicky, or what do you think?
Yeah, that's my predicky. I'm gonna go Ravens 33, and I like to pick numbers that aren't clean. So I'm gonna go 33-11, and that's my prediction.
It's interesting you say that because I actually already picked this one on Tally site where I'm doing horribly, I think. So hopefully I get it turned around this week. But I think I picked this Ravens 33, Lions 23. So I think I was thinking maybe a little bit of that that late surge, but then the Ravens kind of jump on it. They have like 24 or 25 points, something like that. They go on a late drive, run the heck out of the ball, and go ahead and ice this thing and put it away and get out of Detroit Rock City at 2-1.
Love it. Yeah, I think 2-1's a fair, considering the slew of injuries they had and how that Monday Night Football game went and where they were against the Chiefs at one point, 2-1 would be great, 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 great. Considering the Browns are without, I think Odell Beckham's coming back now. It's, who knows? I drafted him in fantasy pretty decently high in one of my leagues, but they're beat up. The Steelers, Big Ben is beat up. They've got some injuries. They're, you know, not feeling so hot. I think Ben Roethlisberger's looked awful. So 2-1 for the Ravens looks good. Looks like they're, you know, going to be in that 10-11 win range from my eyes. And I think that's the most likely outcome. We could see 12 or 13 wins for sure, but 2-1 right now feels really good. And then going to go play, getting a little bit of a game where you can go. I like what Wink Martindale said after his press conference. This could be a game after a Chiefs game where Wink said he likes to play the Chiefs early in the year because they expose his defensive flaws and he can adjust from them. So now this is kind of like the Chiefs in that sense. While they are the hardest exam so far in one way, but they're also kind of like the pretest. They're kind of like the midterm where the Lions can go be the final and you go apply what you learned from the Chiefs on the Lions, see if you can't be a little bit more sure in the back end and things like that. I talked about it last night. The Ravens have never allowed 30 points in back-to-back opening games in the John Harbaugh era. This is the first time that's happened. So I think they're going to definitely have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder to go really dominate this offense.
Definitely. So jump into our mailbag questions, do you think?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do the mailbag and get on out of here. We gave you guys some good content yesterday, so we won't keep it running too long. Without further ado, hopping into the Instagram. Alex the OK. Does Josh Bynes get activated to help with linebacker coverage? I would say no. I don't think he's going to be the answer physically. Mentally, he's helping on the sideline, and he's helping in the film room and in the classroom, so I don't think we're going to see him activated.
Which, by the way, I hate to call Josh out like this, but I thought he was no less than 53 years old in that video that Ted Nguyen posted.
Mega tough scene. Yeah. Mega tough scene. Prediction by Aiden 2, 34-17 Ravens. All right. Michael Murr 12. How can the Ravens use Bell if they do make him active? I don't know. I don't think he fits the persona of the run game, which is an aggressive, decisive run game that doesn't have a lot of patience required. They run a lot of man gap, which you can set up a little bit, but you're going to hit the same hole most of the time as opposed to zone. I don't know. I would like to see Nate McCrary re-signed to the practice squad at least. I would probably rather prefer him to Le'Veon Bell right now. And Nate McCrary dropped by the Broncos, so I think that would be a nice solution there.
Yeah, maybe just pass blocking. And we've talked about the issues with screens. I feel like he can still run those effectively, and those do actually require some patience, kind of no matter what the offense you're talking about. So
sure,
yeah. So maybe if you want to do a little bit of that, but I'm not sure that's a thing where it's like, okay, well, let's elevate Le'Veon Bell just for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be injury if Freeman can't go or Murray or one of those other guys. Williams, I guess, is the only other guy. So one of those guys gets hurt, that would be the reason why. I don't think we're going to see him surpass Devontae Freeman. And this could low-key be like a Devontae Freeman game, I feel like. I think they might want to keep touches low on Tyson Williams in this game, give him a couple reps to, you know, keep learning, keep progressing. But I feel like this is going to be a Murray and Freeman game.
Yeah, Freeman, he's still got juice. We saw it on that one play. I mean, it's not going to be there consistently throughout the entire game, but a play here, a play there, and just one cut hit the hole and he fits this offense a lot more than Le'Veon Bell does. And it is kind of a good opportunity to keep Tyson Williams fresh and not expose him and, you know, increase his margin for error and hurt his confidence. So I like that.
Yeah. And it feels like they like Freeman in the option runs. So, you know, Murray hasn't really gotten those. I don't think that really fits him necessarily. So If you want to lay off Williams, then the option runs are going to go to Freeman. So I think that's definitely a tendency. It's only been one game of Freeman, but I think that's a little bit of a tendency I would assume, is that if Freeman's in the game, I'm going to bet it's probably an option concept. Whereas with Murray, I don't think you're going to see as many of those. And then Williams is the Goldilocks there. So moving on, dedicated TB3. Do you think the D-line will step up with Owe and Harder? Swami also said Odafe Owe gets 2 sacks this game. Yeah, Owe has been really, really solid. I think that he's obviously so athletic and so explosive, but I think that he's been calm and smart. And I just can't say enough about how much I think it helps having Justin Houston and Calais Campbell in Baltimore with him. And it looks so much better than it did at Penn State from that perspective as a IQ pass rusher and understanding hand placement and understanding leverage and angles and things like that much more consistently versus where he was an outstanding run defender at Penn State, and he's been an outstanding run defender so far for the Ravens. So 2 sacks, I could definitely see at least 1 sack. So I think that's not a crazy deal. And do I think the D-line will step up with OA? Yeah, I think they already have a little bit. They're athletic, man. This is the most athletic and fast, aggressive kind of front in terms of speed that the Ravens have had maybe ever with Bowser and OA and Houston, as well as Dalen Hayes, who's been hurt. I don't know what his injury is, but I'd like to see him come back. Maybe he's able to play in this game. He's been limited. Maybe they give him another week and don't really have a reason for him to be on the squad right now, but that'd be someone to watch out for if this game gets out of hand and he is active.
Yeah, and I love the shout-out that Wink Martindale in his presser today gave to Ozzie Newsome for putting Odafe Owe on the Ravens' radar. It feels like an Ozzie-type player, a guy who there's maybe a little bit of doubt about, but big school, kind of good character, not high production guy, which Ozzie did seem to like, but a guy who just seems like he was going to step in and just do everything he needed to do from the neck up. He's done that so far, and he's also done it from the neck down as well as a player. So I'm confident that he's going to produce again this week. And I'm at a point where if you want to match him one-on-one with Penei Sewell, who's played well, and then put Houston over top of Matt Nelson and send blitzers that way to kind of have Houston just sort of wear Nelson down and then maybe get a free rusher in there behind him, I'm confident that that Owe could handle Sewell.
Yeah, Sewell's interesting. His feet are outstanding. I think he's still got some work to do with his hands from what I saw. And just, I haven't watched enough tape yet to be fully confident. But, yeah, so we'll see how it plays out. Moving on, best concessions at the bank. Going to the Browns game in November, IMJ Richter asked. There is a Shake Shack. I have not been there.
You know what's in there stadium? Now is Jimmy's Famous Seafood, right?
Jimmy's is in there. I haven't been there yet either, but there's like some good on the lower level. There's like nooks where there's like seafood offered and some cool things. We'll investigate further and report back after the Colts Monday night game.
I'm not going to out the exact stand because maybe they just had a rough night, but the beer stand, up in, somewhere in the 500s, had a rough showing the other night. I was in line for, and this is not me getting diva or anything, but some listeners
definitely not Jake getting diva about his beer. He's definitely not.
No, never. So, some listeners probably know what I'm talking about too. I was there, all throughout halftime. I had to watch part of the game on TV, which is a disgrace. Let's get it together. Let's get more than one card reader at a beer stand at a football game in 2021. All I'm saying.
Make card readers bountiful again, 2021.
Yes. That's what we'll go with. Yeah, more card. That's what we need more card readers. That's the platform I'm running on.
We do need more card readers. You can never have enough. You can never have enough card readers.
Yeah, you think you have enough, and then all of a sudden something like that happens, and you're watching.
Right in the kisser. You just don't.
Exactly.
We'll report back overall. Elliot_Erskine. This is a good question. And I like doing this. This is like, I ask us this every mailbag, and maybe we'll start like doing it overall. Which Lions player would you steal for the Ravens squad?
That's a good question. I would take probably Hockenson.
That is a sick answer. I don't think I would have had.
How much fun would that be?
That is a sick answer. If it was him and Andrews and Boyle comes back and like, God bless Josh Oliver's heart. He's not TJ Hockenson. That would be sick.
I think
you can
like
split Hockenson out. I think you can split Hockenson out wide a little bit more than you can split Andrews out wide.
Yeah, that touchdown he had the other night, I think he was split out wide. And that was awesome. And Sewell is like the easy answer, but you know, Stanley's coming back. They'll figure it out long term at tackle, I think. You know, beyond this year, they got Juwan James in the fold. So I'd go with the fun answer and go TJ Hockenson and run some interesting two tight end sets with him and Mark Andrews.
Yeah, I'd like to take probably, you know, between Ragnow, Sewell, or Taylor Decker. And I low-key want to say I want to see Jeff Okuda. I think that is my answer just because I want to see what he can do. I feel like he has a bad injury, if I'm not mistaken.
He does, yeah.
Let's pretend he's healthy. I would like to see what the Ravens could do with Jeff Okuda as a press man corner a little bit more. So that I'll go with that for the fun aspect. But if I wanted a player to help them win right now, got to be – either Ragnow or Decker or Sewell. And probably Sewell just overall because he's young and he's already shown to look the part so far, which I wasn't crazy high on him. I'm going to be honest. I definitely had a higher grade on Rashawn Slater. Everyone was calling Sewell the generational player, and I wasn't on that train is the best way I'll put it. I thought he's a good prospect, but 1 year of tape. So moving on, Max Vedan, 55-10. Okay, that'd be chill. Someone asked about Lamar missing time. We're not going to touch about that. They already said he's got the poopies. Destigmatize the poopies. Hashtag it.
Yes.
B-Rose931 gives us his emo question of the week. Are you concerned about the Ravens defense after the first two games? And he adds on to that, when do you think the young linebackers put it all together? I want to start with the young linebackers first. Patrick Queen is communicating pre-snap. I love it. I love to watch it. He is calling things out. He's calling plays out. He did have good plays in that game. Tackling was bad. He has short arms. He's not a great, consistent tackler. Let's be honest. But I like Patrick Queen. I think that he looks better in coverage. You know, the Chiefs are just throwing misdirection and have some really smart leverage option routes and some tough things. And I'm going to go back and watch again and see what it looks like. But again, I don't think the PFF grade matched the play in that Chiefs game. I think a 20, whatever it was nuts. But Malik Harrison just played a little slow in the past game. He's a big physical dude at 6'3", 245, 250, and he doesn't play like it considering we know how athletic he is. He isn't bumping the shit out of tight ends and slot receivers. And stuff. Like, he needs to be physical with them within that five-yard cushion, and he's not. We saw Travis Kelce work him over, and hey, Kelsey's a big, strong guy too. And is an outstanding route runner, great timing, great leverage, flexible dude. But you want to see him tie guys up, frustrate them. You know, if it's first down and you get a holding call, defensive holding, I'm not mad at you. If it's third down, don't do that shit. But I want to see Malik Harrison be a lot more physical and earlier in coverage, in those coverage snaps. So he didn't play a ton last year. And he played 200 snaps-ish, maybe 300. So I think there's a lot to work on still with Harrison in coverage, but I like him a lot, and I think this is going to be a game where he's able to run and hit in zone concepts playing this Detroit Lions team.
Yeah, I think I'm probably ready to say that they're not going to be an elite defense this year. And ultimately, like, that might hurt to hear, but consider the fact that they lost Marcus Peters 2 days before they were supposed to play their first game, and they don't have LJ Ford, who they were supposed to have. So it's tough. And what I would say is I think they have a chance to be a good defense, and this is a because of the fact then, and we're talking about a small sample size here, but I got DVOA pulled up and small sample size. So maybe chicken and the egg, maybe, you know, it's a reflection on them as well, but you're talking about the first passing DVOA, which they just played team in Kansas City, and the 10th, which they played in Las Vegas, which might be better if Derek Carr had played the entirety of the game against Pittsburgh. So you just played two really good offenses and you got out of it 1-1, and you probably could have beaten the Raiders, and you could have lost to the Chiefs too. So 1-1 probably feels like a justified record, but I'm confident that they're not going to be elite, but like what are they going to do without Marcus Peters and losing him in the fashion and the time they did? It happens. And it's also hard to be a defense in 2021 and like be consistently letting up less than 24 points a game. Like it's really hard at this point. So is what it is.
Yeah, I think I haven't been crazy impressed with Deshaun Elliott so far on the back end. I think the safeties are going to lock it down a little bit better as they continue to learn and grow. They don't have Marcus Peters. Anthony Averett comes in. Underrated aspect of that is Jimmy Smith potentially coming back and providing a little stability. I don't think Tavon Young has been outstanding in coverage either. So Deshaun Elliott could miss this game. Something we didn't touch on. He has a concussion. And they might want to say, hey, Geno Stone, Brandon Stevens, go get the reps, see what we can do. Hope that doesn't bite you in the ass. Maybe Elliott's active but doesn't play. I don't know. Who knows? But that is a little something to monitor. But so they play the Lions, they play the Broncos, they play the Colts. I'm not crazy threatened by the Lions, the Broncos, or the Colts passing games, especially you're getting the Colts at home. I like Teddy Bridgewater. I think he's a smart quarterback and will make throws, but I just you touched on it, Jake. You're playing Derek Carr. You're playing the Chiefs. The Raiders are a solidly at least top 10 passing offense, considering the weapons, considering the quarterback, considering the play caller. I think Hunter Renfro is insane and very underrated still. So of all the games you have the Chargers after that stretch. The Vikings, but they got two outside receivers, you know, that can give you some problems, but I don't think they're an efficient passing team, but they're not, you know, killing you, especially if you're the Ravens. Maybe they do. We'll see. Browns? So pretty much not a lot of great passing teams. Aaron Rodgers, they get down the stretch, and the Rams towards the end there. That's a little bit tough. The Bengals have some weapons. Joe Burrow's arm strength, not looking so hot, though. So I think they'll end up being a top five or seven DVOA defense. And I do think they have a chance to be elite. I believe that they're going to continue to figure out how to scheme pressure, and they have better guys to do it with. And I think we're going to see a lot of sacks to start to come down the pipeline in the next couple weeks, and a lot of quarterback hits. So we'll see, but that closes it out for the mailbag. Appreciate you guys. It was a short one. And we got a couple quick ones at the end, pardon me, as we went away. Key matchups from Irv 92 in this game. Let's go marking TJ Hockenson, the Lions offensive line against the Ravens defensive line, specifically, let's say Frank Ragnow and Jonah Jackson against the Ravens interior defensive line, Campbell Williams, Madubuike. Him and McCary Madubuike. That's the right pronunciation. So, those two, and let's say, how are they going to cover Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown? That's the matchup for me.
Yeah, definitely. I would probably agree with that. And, I think it's also going to be a little bit of a coaching chess match as well. So interested to see how that plays out.
Spot on. My buddy, John Geip, if Deshaun Elliott misses week 3 with a concussion, who starts in his place, Brandon or Geno? I think we'll see a rotation a little bit. Geno Stone worked his way in. I think they probably are going to give Brandon Stevens a chance to go be an assignment sound executor. And if he's not, then we see a lot more Geno Stone. And we'll probably also see some dime, I would think, especially if they get a big lead. So we probably will see both of them on the field a couple times if Deshaun Elliott's out.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that's kind of what they're going to want to do with young safeties anyway. So in the event that they're going to get some run here. And listen, it's not good to have Deshaun Elliott out, but this is a game like this to acclimate young guys like that in, I think. You didn't want to put them out there against what the Chiefs have going on with their offensive weapons and Mahomes. So,
right, and you ended up having one on the field anyway. So they dipped their feet in that pool a little bit anyway. Alex Smearman, forgot to say after week 1, Hollywood and Andrews' new handshake is amazing. I don't really remember what it is, but I'm sure it's cool. The Boomer Sooner boys.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Real Oats and Hoes, would you rather have Huntley or Brady run the Ravens offense? If you mean Tom Brady, I mean, I'm going to go with Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think I would take Tom Brady there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Tom Brady over Tyler Huntley. Also, hit me up next time you're in Chicago. Will do. But that caps it out. A couple came in once we started recording. We didn't have a ton, so got to a couple of those. Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. And get us out of here, Jakey boy. We're going to go watch some Thursday Night Football.
Absolutely. Can't wait to, you know, check out Davis Mills and the neck for days that he's working with. But thank you guys for listening for a second day in a row. It was great to get you 3 episodes of content this week. Like Spenny said, that's something that we might start experimenting with a little bit more as we move forward. Kind of good to hop in here and, you know, do some more deep dive intensive stuff. So I think that's kind of how it worked out well yesterday. Thanks to Cole for hopping on that. Thank you guys for listening to this. everyone that tuned into the live show on YouTube, and to everyone listening on your pod feeds today. We will be back on Monday with our typical recap pod that we do. We might fire that one up as a live one. It is going to kind of depend on how the game plays out. It's going to be the first 1 p.m. game of the year, which is going to feel weird. We're probably not going to know what to do with our hands after that one wraps up. So we'll see what happens in that regard. But in the meantime, follow us on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Podcast Beatdown. I am at Jake Luke. That is L-O-U-Q-U-E. And you can also follow Spencer at Ravens for Dummies. That is the number 4 in the middle. And alternatively, you can follow us on Instagram at Baltimore_Beatdown_podcast. And I also wanted to call attention to something else before we get out of here. So we have jumped into the merch game a little bit. So I wanted to touch on that before we got going.
Completely forgot. Most people would probably touch on that first. We are live, ladies and germs. We do have merch out there. You can find it at podcastbeatdownmerch.com. Again, that's podcastbeatdownmerch.com. We got a couple t-shirts on there. We will continue to grow, continue to add to the collection. We got a couple shirts we're throwing in. We got 4 right now. One of them offered in 2 colors. So, or I guess 2 of them are in 2 colors and 1 in all black. We got a Go For It t-shirt, a Baltimore Beatdown Brew Crew t-shirt, and then kind of like a funky podcast t-shirt that have a cool logo and some fun fonts on them. So you can find those again at podcastbeatdownmerch.com. Place an order. They're running $25 just about. So go on there, order a shirt, support the pod, get out and about, wear it to listen to the pod, wear it to games, wear it to the bar, whatever you want. They're kind of cool shirts. I like them a good bit, and we'll keep adding, but we appreciate you guys listening. We love our listeners. And we'll be running some contests for some free merch coming up shortly. But if you're a longtime listener, we would love to have you rocking a Baltimore Beatdown podcast shirt. Again, that is podcastbeatdownmerch.com. Love you guys.
Yeah, we certainly do. And just like our approach with the show of making a show that we personally would want to listen to, we made a collection of shirts for our first sort of drop here that we would want to wear. So we hope that you guys like our taste. We hope that you share our taste and that you will buy something and support the pod here as we get going and jump into the merch game. Just, you know, check us out. We're a small shop. It's Small Biz September. So jump in there, support the boys, support the pod. And thanks for supporting the pod in the way that you do already. And maybe we'll get a little bit of a giveaway situation going. Maybe we'll do another iTunes review contest coming up or something like that, or something of that nature to give one of these things away and get the ball rolling with it. So thank you guys for tuning in. We will talk to you again later. Or early next week, I should say. And until next time.
See ya.
Arrivederci.
Gourlami. Gourlami. Arrivederci.
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 Arrivederci.